Hey everyone, and welcome back for another deep dive. Today, we're going to be looking at something that might not be on your radar, but honestly could seriously impact your investments.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's the link between a company's environmental track record and its likelihood of going bankrupt.
Interesting.
And to get this, we're not just talking about, you know, a few isolated cases here and there.
Right.
We're diving into a study that looked at nearly 8,000 companies.
Wow.
Across 70 countries.
Yeah.
That's a massive data set.
It is indeed a huge data set. And you know what's really interesting is that the findings of this study, they paint a very compelling picture of how these risks are playing out globally.
Okay, so before we get into all the doom and gloom, let's set the stage a little bit. When we talk about environmental risks in this context, we're talking about two key things: biodiversity risk and climate vulnerability. Can you break those down for us?
Absolutely. So biodiversity risk, that's all about the potential fallout for a company if the natural environment that it depends on gets damaged.
Right.
So think deforestation, pollution, habitat loss, things that disrupt ecosystems.
Gotcha.
For example, imagine a furniture company that makes its furniture out of a specific type of wood, and then all of a sudden deforestation just completely wipes out that resource.
Oh, wow.
That company's entire business model is in jeopardy.
Yeah, that would be a direct hit to their bottom line for sure.
Oh.
So climate vulnerability, that's about how susceptible a company is to the negative effects of climate change, right?
Exactly. It covers a much wider range of issues. We're talking about things like extreme weather events that can disrupt operations, changes in climate patterns that impact resource availability, and also the costs of transitioning to a low carbon economy.
Right.
So it's not just about weathering the physical storms, but also navigating the economic and regulatory shifts that come with climate change.
So it's almost like a company trying to sail through a hurricane while simultaneously rebuilding its ship for calmer waters, all while facing pressure from investors who are questioning, you know, is this ship even seaworthy in the first place?
That's a very vivid analogy. And to really dissect this, the research breaks down climate vulnerability into three specific categories.
Right.
The first one is carbon dependency.
Oh.
And this is all about how much a company relies on processes that emit a lot of carbon.
Gotcha.
So think about like a company that operates a fleet of gas guzzling trucks.
Yeah.
They're going to have a much higher carbon dependency than a company that maybe delivers its goods using electric vehicles.
Makes sense. So then there's climate change risk. Is that about how much a company is actually talking about the potential impacts of climate change on its business?
You got it. It's almost like a peek behind the curtain to see if the company's management is acknowledging the risk and incorporating them into their decision making.
Okay.
Are they treating climate change as like a distant threat, or are they really actively planning for a potential disruption?
So that's like looking at their annual reports, their public statements, things like that, to see how seriously they're taking climate risks.
Right.
Okay. And then the last one is climate change exposure.
Yeah, climate change exposure is interesting. It basically captures how frequently a company talks about climate change in general.
Oh, okay.
And this gives us a sense of, you know, their engagement with the whole issue.
Gotcha.
Are they actively participating in discussions about solutions? Are they investing in research and development to reduce their environmental footprint?
So even if they're not explicitly acknowledging risks, a high level of climate change exposure could suggest that they're at least aware of it. And potentially thinking about the long-term implications.
Precisely. Now, what's really groundbreaking about this research is that it actually connects all of these factors, you know, biodiversity risks, climate vulnerability, all of it to a company's financial stability.
Right.
And specifically to the dreaded B word, bankruptcy.
Oh, yeah. That's what we're all here for, right?
Yeah.
That's the juicy stuff.
It is the juicy stuff.
So what did they find?
Well, the key finding is very stark. Companies facing high levels of both biodiversity risk and climate vulnerability are significantly more likely to go bankrupt.
Wow.
It's not just one or the other.
Right.
It's the combination that's particularly dangerous.
So that is a big red flag for investors, for sure. But how does this actually play out? You know, what are the mechanisms that drive a company from, you know, being exposed to environmental risks to actual financial ruin?
There are several pathways. The most obvious one is just disrupted operations.
Okay.
When ecosystems are damaged or a big climate event hits, a company's ability to function can be directly impacted.
Right.
And this leads to lost revenue and in some cases even shutdowns.
Makes sense.
So, for example, imagine a manufacturing plant that relies on a steady water supply and then a prolonged drought hits.
Oh, yeah.
They might have to completely halt production or pay an exorbitant amount of money to have water trucked in.
Right.
Both of those options hit the bottom line very hard.
It's like a chain reaction. You know, the environmental risk triggers this, like, financial shockwave. So what else?
Well, then there's supply chain chaos. Even if a company isn't directly affected, problems with its suppliers due to, you know, biodiversity laws or climate change can have a huge domino effect.
Right.
So let's say a food company sources all of its palm oil from a region that's suddenly hit by deforestation.
Oh, wow, yeah.
All of a sudden they're facing shortages, prices are going up, and then they've got this pressure from consumers who are concerned about, you know, are we getting our palm oil ethically?
It's a mess.
Yeah.
And it really highlights how interconnected all of these systems are. You know, one weak link can bring down the whole chain.
Absolutely. And then you've got the credit crunch. Investors are becoming very wary of companies with a bad environmental track record.
For sure.
And this makes it harder for those companies to get loans or attract new investment.
Yeah, they don't want to touch them.
Right. And this can create a financial squeeze that makes them even more vulnerable to economic downturns or any kind of unexpected challenge.
I like they're stuck in quicksand.
Yeah.
The more they struggle, the deeper they sink.
Exactly.
Okay, so what's the final nail in the coffin?
Higher operating costs. Adapting to a changing climate and transitioning to sustainable practices costs a lot of money up front.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, think about a company that has to retrofit its factories to reduce emissions or invest in renewable energy sources.
Right.
These costs can really strain a company's finances, especially if they're already dealing with all the other factors we've talked about.
So it's like this multi-pronged attack on a company's financial health.
Yes.
Environmental risks create all these operational disruptions, supply chain headaches, they limit access to capital, and then they drive up costs.
It's a recipe for disaster.
It is.
And what this research is telling us is that it's not hypothetical, it's happening right now.
This is a serious wake-up call, and it doesn't stop there right now. The research also reveals some really fascinating nuances about how these risks are playing out in the real world.
It does, and some of the findings might really surprise you.
Okay, I'm all ears. What did they find that goes against conventional wisdom?
One of the most intriguing findings is that financial constraints, you know, like limited access to credit or tight budgets, can actually be a double-edged sword.
Oh, really? How so?
Well, for companies that are super reliant on carbon being financially constrained, dramatically increases their bankruptcy risk.
So it's like they're trying to outrun a wildfire with an empty gas tank.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great way to put it.
Terrifying visual.
Yeah.
But you said it's a double-edged sword, so what's the other side of that?
Well, for companies that are already openly acknowledging their climate risks, being financially constrained seems to actually lower their risk.
Wait a minute. Now that's interesting. So why would having less money make them less likely to go bankrupt?
It's a really good question. It could be that, you know, necessity breeds innovation.
Yeah.
If a company is already struggling financially, they might be more motivated to adapt and find solutions to reduce their environmental impact.
Right. They can't afford not to.
Exactly. You know, they're forced to get creative, find ways to operate more efficiently, and that can ultimately make them more resilient.
Yeah.
Whereas companies with tons of cash, they might just be tempted to keep kicking the can down the road and delaying those changes.
So it's kind of a sink or swim situation, and that pressure just forces them to become stronger swimmers. What other unexpected findings came out of this research?
Another interesting one is that growth can be good, but only sometimes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Companies that are investing a lot in research and development, they tend to be better at weathering those storms of carbon dependency and climate risk.
So it's like they're not just trying to adapt to the changing environment, they're trying to get ahead of the curve and shape the future.
Exactly.
But you said growth is only good sometimes. When doesn't it help?
Well, while R&D is great for those bigger climate challenges, it doesn't seem to do much for biodiversity risk, which tends to be more localized and less predictable.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
For example, a company can spend millions of dollars developing these drought-resistant crops. But if its operations depend on a specific species of pollinator that suddenly disappears because of habitat loss, all that R&D might not be enough. Right. It's a good reminder that biodiversity risks are often more complex and they're harder to solve with just technology alone. Mm-hmm. You really need to protect and restore those natural mm-hmm. systems. It's not just about outsmarting nature. It's about working with it.
Exactly.
Okay.
Now, here's one that I think might surprise you a little bit. The research found that carbon-intensive industries like oil and gas, mining, they present a bit of a paradox.
Okay.
While these companies are facing a lot more scrutiny now for their environmental impact, those that are already deeply reliant on carbon actually seem less likely to go bankrupt because of climate vulnerabilities.
Wait, that doesn't make sense. Why would the companies that are most exposed to climate risk be the ones that are less likely to fail?
Well, it's possible that the investors have already factored that risk into their valuations.
Okay.
Because everyone knows that these industries face climate-related challenges. So those risks might already be baked into their stock prices and the terms of their loans.
Oh, I see. So it's like buying a house in an earthquake zone. You're going to pay less for it because you know there's a risk.
Exactly. So it's not that they're immune to risk. It's just that the market has already kind of priced in that potential for disruption. So what else? Let's see. Oh, location, location, location. Climate change exposure seems to be a bigger problem for companies in North America, Oceania, and South America. But for companies in Asia and Europe, it seems to matter less.
So where a company is physically located can actually impact its chances of survival when it comes to climate change.
It really can.
That's crazy. Why? Right. What's driving those geographical differences?
It's a few things. Differences in government policies, market dynamics, even cultural perceptions of climate change.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You know, for example, Europe has been leading in climate policy for decades. So companies over there have had more time to adapt and, you know, invest in green technology.
They've had a head start in the race towards sustainability.
Yeah.
What about Asia? Asia's huge and really diverse.
That's true. You have everything from, you know, rapidly growing economies to countries that are already deeply affected by climate change.
Right.
But I think overall, there's a growing recognition that climate change needs to be addressed. And a lot of Asian governments are investing a lot in renewable energy and sustainable infrastructure.
It sounds like there's a sense of urgency there and a willingness to really take action. Mm-hmm. But North America, Oceania, and South America, it sounds like they're lagging behind a little bit.
Yeah, they face a lot of unique challenges, things like political resistance to climate action or economies that are heavily reliant on those carbon-intensive industries.
Right.
But you still see pockets of innovation and leadership within those regions. So I think the key takeaway here is that there's no one-size-fits-all approach. Companies and investors really need to look at these risks through this geographically nuanced lens to make better decisions.
It's like we've been looking at this giant tapestry of global risks, and now we're zooming in to see all the different threads, all the patterns and textures that actually make up the bigger picture.
That's a great way to think about it.
Yeah.
And this is where things get really interesting, because while these risks are very real, there's another side to the story.
Okay. I like where this is going.
The global transition to a more sustainable future isn't just about avoiding disaster. It's also creating a ton of opportunity.
Okay, good. We've had enough doom and gloom for one episode.
I agree.
Let's hear about the silver linings.
Okay, so what kind of opportunities are we talking about?
Well, there's this massive global investment pouring into clean energy, sustainable agriculture, green infrastructure.
Right.
These sectors are about to explode with growth over the next few years. This is creating brand new markets, new jobs, and companies that are in a position to capitalize on these trends, they're going to do really well.
So it's not just about playing defense. You got to play offense too.
Yeah.
Recognizing those emerging trends and getting ahead of the curve. What else?
Consumer demand for sustainable products and services, it's through the roof.
Mm.
People want to spend their money in a way that aligns with their values.
Right.
Companies that understand that and can meet those demands are going to have a huge advantage. So it's not just about mitigating risk. It's about building a brand that really speaks to those eco-conscious consumers.
Exactly. So I think for companies trying to figure all of this out, what are the key takeaways here?
Well, the biggest one is that managing environmental risk is no longer optional.
Yeah.
It's essential for long-term success. Companies have to be proactive. They have to figure out, you know, how exposed are we to biodiversity risk and climate vulnerability, and what can we do about it?
So it's not just about checking boxes and complying with regulations.
Right.
It's got to be a core part of their strategy.
Exactly. I think it requires a real shift in mindset. You have to integrate sustainability into every single part of the business.
It's a big change.
It is. But the companies that embrace this, they're the ones that are going to succeed. This is the future of business. And the companies that get that, they're going to be writing the success stories of the next decade. All right, so we've covered a ton of ground in this deep dive. We talked about the reality of environmental risks, the potential of this sustainability revolution. But now I kind of want to shift gears a little bit and talk about what this all means for you, our listener. Because whether you're an investor, you know, you want to make smart choices with your money, or you're someone who is thinking about maybe changing careers.
Right.
This information is going to be super helpful for navigating, you know, this changing world that we're in.
Absolutely. Yeah. So let's start with investors. If you're someone who wants to invest in a way that aligns with your values, you know, you want to create a portfolio that's both profitable and sustainable.
Yeah.
You have to start looking beyond those traditional financial metrics.
So it's not just about, you know, chasing the highest return anymore.
Right, exactly.
You need to think about the company's environmental and social impact as well.
You got it. And there are actually some really great resources out there to help you do this. So you can look at ESG ratings, which evaluate companies based on their environmental, social, and governance performance.
Yeah, ESG ratings are becoming more and more popular. You can find them on pretty much any major financial website.
Yeah, that's true. Another great resource is those company sustainability reports.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of companies now publish these really detailed reports that outline their environmental initiatives, you know, talk about the progress they're making towards their sustainability goals.
Right.
Those reports are really insightful. They can give you a good sense of, you know, is this company actually committed?
It's like a peek behind the curtain to see if they're actually walking the walk.
Exactly. And then also, you know, don't underestimate the power of engagement.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
As an investor, you actually have a voice. You know, go to those shareholder meetings, ask tough questions, and just let the companies that you're investing in know that you care about their environmental performance.
Use that influence to drive positive change.
Yeah.
So what about folks who are maybe thinking about their careers? I mean, is this whole sustainability revolution creating, you know, new opportunities out there?
It absolutely is. Yeah, the transition to a more sustainable future is creating this huge demand for all these new skills and expertise across a whole bunch of industries. We're talking renewable energy engineers, sustainable agriculture specialists, corporate sustainability consultants, green building architects. I mean, there's a ton.
So if you're looking for a career that is both fulfilling and, you know, somewhat future-proof,
right,
the sustainability sector is probably worth checking out.
For sure.
So what advice would you give to someone who is, you know, thinking about making a career shift, wants to jump into this area?
Well, first, you know, do your research. Figure out what areas of sustainability align with your interests and your skills.
Right.
Because there are so many different paths you could take.
Yeah.
You could work on cutting-edge clean energy technologies, or you could help companies develop more sustainable supply chains.
It's a really dynamic and quickly growing field.
Mm-hmm.
So there's definitely something out there for everyone.
For sure. And also network. Network with people who are already working in sustainability.
Yeah.
You know, go to industry events, join professional organizations, reach out to people on LinkedIn, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, learn from their experiences. That's invaluable.
It's about building those connections and finding those mentors who can really guide you on your journey. What else?
And you know what? Don't be afraid to start small, even if you can't, you know, completely switch careers right away.
Right.
Think about how you can incorporate sustainability into your current role.
That's a good idea.
You know, volunteer for a sustainability initiative at your company. Take some online courses to kind of broaden your knowledge and your skills. Every step you take makes a difference.
It's a reminder that, you know, we all have a role to play in this. And it's those individual actions.
Hmm.
When enough people take those actions, it creates a huge force for change.
Absolutely. The challenges that we're facing, they're complex, they're interconnected, but the solutions are too.
Yeah.
By working together as investors, as professionals, as consumers, we can create a future that is both prosperous and sustainable.
It's exciting. We are on the cusp of a major transformation, and the choices that we make today are going to have a huge impact on the world of tomorrow. So as we wrap up this deep dive, we'll leave you with this. How are you going to use your knowledge, your skills, your influence to be a part of the solution? We are so confident that you, our listeners, are up for the task. Until next time, stay curious.